This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Beautiful Sunday. Almost as nice as that Saturday I had yesterday when I went tubing down the James River. Can't make any specific underwriting for that company, but my, was that a good time. Let's thank the folks in Lovingston because it's nearest the James River. 94.7 for those lovely folks in Lovingston, some of whom might be cleaning their house today. Let's also take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics, who underwrite on the program. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. The program today, something that I needed to learn a little bit more about, an organization called CASA. Is that the proper pronunciation of that? CASA versus CASA?
Yes, it is CASA.
All right, a little louder there. Patty?
Yes, it is pronounced CASA.
All right, Patty. That's Patty Thomas Cato?
Yes.
See, that's going to throw me the whole hour. It's Cato, but it's CASA. Court-appointed special advocates here in the studio today. Patty Thomas Cato is a volunteer. And Phoebe, let's see if your microphone is set up. Nope. So let's move over to the other one.
Okay. We're sharing now.
Yeah,
we're
you good. Are. And so lower your R's.
Okay.
Phoebe Frosch. Proper?
Frosch.
Frosch. You ladies are going to throw me all hour. Phoebe Frosch, who is the advancement director at Piedmont CASA.
Yes.
What is that? I know what a volunteer is. I volunteer at here at WNRN. What is the advancement director? What does that do?
Well, I advance the program in moving it forward by raising funds. I have what's generally known as the development director position of all the fundraising, and then also recruiting for new volunteers and just talking about what we do in the community and being involved with some decisions about program enhancement and just where Piedmont CASA wants to go in the future.
So it's advancement for the organization,
yes, sir.
Not for the people involved in the organization.
Right.
Like at my regular job, if I wanted to advance to the next position and take on more responsibility and get more pay,
mm-hmm.
That's not your job.
No.
Okay. So Phoebe Frosch, Patty Thomas, Cato here for CASA. You guys are working my tongue. CASA, court-appointed special advocates. Now, let's... You know, we talked about pronunciation and what the jobs are, but court-appointed special advocates, that's a long-winded term. What is that? Please explain to those in the NRN listening area what CASA is.
Okay. Well, I'll start. CASA is actually a national program that was started in the 1970s by a judge in Seattle, Washington. He was a juvenile domestic relations court judge who felt that as he sat on the bench and was asked to make very serious decisions that would affect the rest of a child's life, should the child return home, should the child be put in a residential facility, should the child be put in foster care, questions like that, that he felt he really didn't have enough information. He really wished he could know more about that child to base his decision on that information. So this was really his brainchild, and it's just been going strong ever since then. His idea was to train community members to be an advocate for these children in a one-on-one basis and learn as much as possible about them, investigate their entire situation, and report to the court. And Piedmont CASA opened its doors in 1995, as the CASA office serving Charlottesville and Albemarle County.
Is there another group of CASA in the state of Virginia and close by to the Charlottesville-Albemarle area?
There are over 20 CASA programs in the state of Virginia. It just really depends on whether people get together and start one. However, it's not a government agency. No, it's a private nonprofit. Piedmont CASA was started by a group of citizens who got together, knew about it from other states, sat in coffee shops, brainstormed some local attorneys.
So you get no funds, federal funds, state funds, local funds? I mean, other than things that have been donated?
We do get state and federal funds that we apply for, but those are very important, and they're great. We do compete for them. We get a money from the Victim of Crimes Act, for instance, because abused and neglected children are victims of crimes legally. Those funds account for about 25% of our budget. And those funds are not something that we depend on because it's iffy, especially right now.
All right. So, we are talking about CASA, a local organization here for the best interest of abused and neglected children. An organization that, at least from the answer from the last question, is mostly done by volunteers and private donations.
Yes. And the essential part of the program is that the actual investigation of the cases are all done by volunteers. The idea behind it is to get community members involved, people like Patty, who volunteer and have for years, to know more about where they live, to know more about the needs of children in their community, and needs of people with mental illness, needs of people struggling with poverty, and what they can do to get involved. I tell every class of new volunteers who come in to train that be very clear, we're not training volunteers because we can't afford to pay someone. It's because this is an integral part of the mission, is to train community members.
All right, mission. Key word for almost any private organization. And maybe private isn't the proper word there, but any organization, especially that is so dependent on volunteer work and private donations.
Mm-hmm.
What is the true mission? I mean, I read this sentence that I think I, pulled out of an email conversation that we had or somewhere off your website. And your website, real quick, mm-hmm. is?
It is pcasa.org.
All right. Very easy to find. PCASA.org. What is the mission? Because I read this sentence, advocates for the best interests of abused and neglected children. So is the mission summed up in such an easy statement?
Well, no, of course. And I, as the advancement director, I come up against this all the time because it's complicated what we do, and it's not easily.
And that's why we need a full hour.
Exactly. That's why we're thrilled to be here. Best interest of a child is a complicated question. These are children whose cases are already before the juvenile courts in Charlottesville and Albemarle County because of neglect or abuse by their caregivers.
So that's something I found interesting, and I hate to keep interrupting, but these aren't children who did anything wrong, or maybe certainly a large percentage of them are not children who have been arrested or caught doing vandalism or something. The
right.
Children didn't do anything.
Right, and that's an important fact to know. These are children who are victims. I mean, it's not a word I use lightly. I think a lot of people see themselves as victims who perhaps aren't. Children are remarkable, the children we deal with, because they are victims and they often don't see themselves as victims. They're very resilient. They're very positive about trying to be happy, most of them. But for whatever reasons, their families have not been able to take care of them, to keep them safe, to keep them healthy, and or to raise them in an appropriate environment. So often, when we get a case referred to our office, the family has already been working with the Department of Social Services, sometimes for over a year. that they've come to the attention of Child Protective Services, and they have been trying to redirect the family, trying to improve the situation, so that court is always the most extreme intervention. Certain milder interventions have failed. So the social worker and the city, the attorney for the Department of Social Services, have filed a petition.
You mentioned to me, and again, you know, I don't want to fool people into thinking that this is all spur of the moment, because this is a difficult organization in terms of paths taken, needs for children, and just information that is shared back and forth. And so we sent several emails, and you sent me to the website, et cetera. And one of the things that caught my attention was you mentioned that legal and social service systems succeed and fail. And I'm curious, it seems as though you're jumping in on the failure part. You're jumping in on the part to help turn around where the failures happen. And I'm curious as to whether that's true, whether I you know, took the right mindset on that, and where they are, where the legal and the social services are succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want this to be a negative hour.
Right. No, absolutely. And there's so much about what we do that's very positive. And the short answer is no, CASA does not get involved because other systems and other elements in the system have failed. Absolutely not. The whole blueprint of this program, conceived by that judge, was that we're filling a gap that no one else fills. We provide a service that works beautifully in tandem with the other services. So we don't come in because someone else is not doing their job. We do a job no one else does. When I say that we get a case when it's come to court, that means that the very good and positive efforts of the Department of Social Services and other agencies have failed, only in the sense of failed to correct the problem. That, you know, parents were not able to come up to a certain standard where they were then raising their children on their own. So that's why a more invasive intervention was required, and that's why the case comes to court. At that point, any case that comes to the courts for Charlottesville or Albemarle that has an allegation of abuse or neglect is automatically referred to our office for the assignment of a volunteer for that child.
So anybody that has abuse or neglect, again, we are talking about CASA, a local organization, almost entirely volunteers. Phoebe Frosch, you're not a volunteer.
Correct.
Patty Thomas-Cato is a volunteer.
Yes.
Who I'm going to start hitting up for questions in a moment. I don't want you getting all nervous, like, oh, my gosh, all this time's gone by. I haven't gotten to speak yet. CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, which is a group in the area. And actually, there are multiple statewide and nationwide. You said 20 mm-hmm. in the state of Virginia. Advocates for the best interests of abused and neglected children, the majority of which have not done anything wrong. They are just living in bad circumstances.
Yes.
Patty Thomas-Cato, again, a volunteer here for representing her involvement with CASA. I'm curious as to what you do, and I'm curious as to what drew you into doing this. Because I've got a question later. I was amazed about the length of time involved. So, you know, you don't get into that yet. But what made you want to say, oh, yeah, how interesting. I'd rather do this than work at Red Cross. Hey, sounds more interesting than going on air at WNRN.
I started volunteering in 1998 with Greater Prince William CASA in Manassas, Virginia, where I live with my family. And I thought it was just a perfect fit for me because for many years I was frustrated hearing about children that were abused and neglected.
What is your background? Do you come from a background of this sort? Like, were you, you know, does your family have someone involved in the court system or anything like that?
No. I've done a lot of different things in my life. I was a preschool teacher, and I've done a lot of volunteering in this public school system, PTO president, and so on. And just over the years, I've read a lot about children that are in the system that sometimes get lost. And so I thought, when I found out about the CASA in Manassas, I was thrilled, because I thought, wow, this is something that I can do to help. And I've been doing it ever since that time. So it was a perfect fit for me. And what was the rest of your question? What I'm doing now?
Yeah, I mean, what you know, how did you get involved? And I guess what makes up a volunteer? But before that, you said that you were a child school teacher,
mm-hmm.
and a PTO president.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, did you see these sorts of children that you see now? Did you see them in that stage in your life?
Yes, yes. I mean, it's something that I've always been aware of since I was a very young person. I mean, I noticed children in the grocery store sometimes that I think are in trouble. Maybe their parents are yelling or using profanity or smacking them in public. And this just is something I've always been concerned about. Pretty much my whole life. Right now, I'm volunteering with Piedmont CASA, and you go through a training session, 30-hour training session, and then when you get sworn in by the court, and then when you get your case, the first thing you do is you go and you meet the child in your case, and then you investigate and find out everything, pretty much everything that's going on right now in the child's life, and you also find out what happened in the past. You meet the relatives that the child's involved with. You go to the school. You meet the teachers. You can talk to the principal. You meet doctors and psychologists. You just do a very thorough investigation of anything that that child is involved with. If they're in a foster home, you would go and visit the child at the foster home and get to know the foster family. And, of course, then you write your court report after your investigation is completed and report to the judge. And basically, I think the most important thing about being a volunteer is being consistent and visiting that child, and that child will have at least one adult in their lives that they can count on and trust. And it's just a great feeling when you can accomplish that.
All right, 11:18 here on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, as we talk about a local organization, where we talk about the Piedmont CASA is who is represented here in the studio today at WNRN. Piedmont CASA, court-appointed special advocates who serve in the best interests of abused and neglected children. Phoebe Frosch, advancement director at Piedmont CASA. And that title, as we determined, was to make decisions on the future of CASA, not the volunteers.
Yes,
and
in
CASA.
Yes.
And we also have Patty Thomas Cato, who is a volunteer, and it sounds like a long-term volunteer, not someone who's fresh into the organization. 11:19 here on the Wake Up Call. Let me give you today's weather. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley: mostly sunny, hot and humid today. Highs 85 to 90. Isolated thunderstorms tonight. Lows 65 to 70. Partly cloudy tomorrow. Highs 90 to 95. Right now, it's pretty clear across the listening area. 85 in the Valley, 85 in Lynchburg, 85 in Richmond. 1 degree higher in Charlottesville at 86.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, and let's also let you know about other interesting information here. Today's programming brought to you by Center for Peace and Justice, which is co-sponsoring a public forum for alternatives to attacking Iran with featured speakers. You can find them on Monday at 7 p.m. at the Albemarle County Office Building. For more information, charlottesvillepeace.org or the local number 434-961-6278, charlottesvillepeace.org. All right, back in action with Phoebe Frosch and Patty Thomas Cato talking about CASA. You can look them up again online, pcasa.org. That's for Piedmont CASA. You know, we talked about the role of the CASA volunteer, and Patty, you mentioned that you get appointed by a judge to handle your case. I'm curious, how many cases when you write your report at the end, how many of those cases does the judge sort of stamp as, this is what we're going to do? Does your report include a suggested, you know, this should be what happens next, and the judge just says, oh, okay, you spent all this time with the person, here we go, move along?
Our reports do include a recommendation section, and I know that our local judges here read our reports very thoroughly and appreciate the work that all the volunteers and the support staff do at CASA. So that is a very, very important part of our reports, and I think many times the judges do consider our recommendations and do agree and try to, you know, work with all the different people involved in the case to make that happen. Phoebe?
Yeah, because Phoebe, that answer was many times, and I'm curious as to if this is a program that depends on the judge assigning a CASA volunteer to do all the work. The volunteer spends an incredible amount of time. I believe the amount of time is, what is the average amount of time? It's like 18 months or something?
The average time on a case is 22 months, actually. So, yeah, our criteria for closing a case is that a child has been placed in a safe and permanent home. We come in, as I said before, after the abuse and neglect has taken place. We're not fact finders in terms of investigating whether there is abuse or neglect. That is, thankfully, left up to very highly trained professionals. So we come in to say, what next? Now what do we do? Where should this child live? Can a child have visits with its parents, even if they can't live with the child? Does the child need that emotionally? Is the child falling behind in school? Where is the best place for this child to live? And there are many cases where the child goes home again at the end of the year, and that's a wonderful thing. And there are times when the child cannot go home because it will not be safe. And given that, it's very important in all of these cases I'm describing that the child receive services, that the child heal, that the child become a successful young adult. So that's really our focus, and it takes a long time. And so we follow the child all through. There's when a child has been removed, in those cases, there is a minimum of 12 months that the family has to try to comply and to have the child return to them. So we are with the child working and talking to the family all through that, and often there are extensions, another 6 months if the family is showing progress, and we stay on through all of that and often monitor after the child has gone home for several months to make sure everything stays okay and that the family's getting the support, or if the child is placed in permanent foster care or parental rights are terminated and the child is adopted, to make sure the child is doing okay, to stay there, to be a consistent presence in that child's life.
But how many, and that's a wide variety of mm-hmm. options out there.
Right.
And you have a volunteer who spends 22 months mm-hmm. from start to finish.
Right.
But what is the percentage of the local judge saying, thank you for your work, I appreciate, because you said that was what started CASA,
mm-hmm, exactly.
Was the judge wanting more information.
Right.
And I don't want to knock our area judges.
Oh, no.
I'm just looking to find out
sure. What
is the percentage.
Well, and that is a statistic that we have just started tracking, and I'm happy to say that 98% of our recommendations are followed by the judges. I also have a statement actually I brought with me that was not written for this radio show, but Judge Barry, who is the Charlottesville Juvenile and Domestic Court judge, has written to us in the last 2 months saying that, telling us, and I'm quoting, not only do I enjoy speaking with CASA workers, but I think it is very important that they know how much we value their work, that they realize what an integral part CASA is to this court, and how much we appreciate their efforts. If they can take the time to do all of this for perhaps only a thank you, The least we can do is let them know the court appreciates what they are doing. And Judge Johnson, who is the judge for Albemarle County, he's described what we do as the organization who fills in between the lines of the coloring book. All of the social workers and the guardian ad litem and attorneys who do a wonderful job and work very hard. They have 30 cases each, most of them. They can give him, as he described it, the outline, and we fill it in. Who really is this child? What does this child like to do? Who does this child miss? What's going to help this child?
All right, again, we are talking about court-appointed special advocates, those folks who represent the best interests for abused and neglected children. Patty Thomas Cato, a volunteer for the organization. Phoebe Frosch in administration for the organization. Dial us up. Maybe you have a question that I haven't gotten to or don't even have on my outline. 979-0919. Use the toll-free number if you're further out, and you can find out if your area has a CASA organization, and you can become asked how to become a volunteer or anything like that. The toll-free line, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I'm assuming everyone can spell well. 979-0919. Dial us up. Sean, doing the production today, he'll answer the phone and pass you through. Or WNRN Studio, maybe if you're listening online and want to send me an instant message. All right. One of the questions, you know, let's lay out some of the background here. You mentioned that some of those folks who do the outline have 30 cases at one time. How many does a volunteer at CASA do at one time?
Most volunteers have one case, and a case consists of one child or one sibling group. So you could conceivably be advocating for two or three children who are in one family. We do have some volunteers who take two cases, but that's usually the limit. About 35% of our volunteers have a full-time job. So it is quite possible to do this work on top of that. When we talk about being on a case for 22 months, and of course that means some are longer and some are shorter, the average amount of time spent is somewhere between 8 and 12 or 15 at the hours in a month, not a week. So the beauty of this system is that it's something you can fit into many stages of your life. We have people who are retired, who have, as Patty describes, worked in the school system. Some of them, they tell me, I saw children sitting in the back of my classroom. I worried about them. I was too busy to get that involved. I wanted to, as soon as I retired, I wanted to get more involved. But we do have people who are home with young children, people who travel, people who have demanding jobs. And the beauty of this is a lot of people can do it for a little bit instead of a few people doing it full time.
So it sounds like there is no typical. I mean, if you've got this wide range of people that you just described, there is no typical advocate.
Well, that's true.
Other than maybe the care that goes into,
yes,
into the case.
Well, of course, they're all wonderful people. But one thing I will say, and I present this as a challenge, about 75% of our volunteers are women. So,
really?
Yeah, you guys got to step up to the plate.
Yeah, you guys.
Yeah.
Rusty, Drew. Drew just walked into the studio. Come on, Drew.
Got your email, right?
Rusty. Mike Friend, where are you, buddy?
And, you know, many of these children are in homes where they don't have a male figure. So men are a great, great resource for us, and we work on that all the time. Shaming helps sometimes. It's not working with you, but we'll do anything we can to get more guys.
I get shamed on a daily basis, Phoebe. This just washes off my back.
Well, okay, you're inured to it. I have to try harder. But we have one of our volunteers I know is 81 years old, doing a fantastic job, very active on his case, is really connected with this teenager. And we do also have volunteers in their 20s and every age in between. We have a very successful program with the law school where three or four law students every year train with us and advocate for a child under our supervision.
And why is the law school an important group to have with you?
Well, it's great because, of course, we are hoping to encourage and influence upcoming bright young people to take an interest in this and make this their passion in life. It is a great for us, too, because we're always looking for volunteers. This is labor-intensive work, and recruitment is difficult. These students get some pro bono credit at the law school, so it's really a win-win situation. It's a very valuable learning experience for them. They do great work for these kids, so everybody comes out ahead.
All right, 11:31 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about the CASA organization advocating for the best interests of abused and neglected children in the Piedmont area, and there are other organizations in the state, and you can find them nationally as well, PCASA.org for the local set if you want to go online and take a look. Patty Thomas Cato, a volunteer, Phoebe Frosch, a director here at PCASA in the studio today. Let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for allowing us to be on the air this hour. Your local source for camping and backcapping supplies, kayaks, canoes, outdoor footwear. With current gas prices and airfares, Blue Ridge Mountain Sports encourages you to discover the outdoor adventures right on your doorstep. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen in Richmond and at BRDMS. I didn't spell that it right. BRMS.com. I'll give them another shot. BRMS.com. You can dial us up, ask your questions as we talk about CASA, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Ladies, and Patty, I'll ask this to you because you are the volunteer. You have a case that's appointed to you. How do you make a close relationship for someone to trust you who has been either abused or neglected, and in, I would assume, many cases both, to someone that they have no idea who you are and why they should in any manner trust you?
That's a great question. It takes time to build a relationship with a child in the system. Many times they haven't had people that they could count on in their own families, and when they start in the system, there are a lot of people that they don't know that they're involved with, they've never seen before. So it does take time and patience. It takes visiting, and when you say you're going to visit that child, you show up. And after a kind of fairly short amount of time, I'd say a few weeks, they begin to trust you. Also takes great listening skills. Many times I don't say much. I just sit there and listen. And sometimes we just, we'll go for a walk. Depending on where the child is placed, sometimes we can do art projects or cooking projects. And it also, of course, depends on the age of the child. So there's many ways that you can develop trust with your child, and it's very important. And, you know, when you see that look on their face when they see you and they're just so happy that you're there with them, it just makes it all worthwhile.
How long does it take, though? And are there different... I would assume that each child needs a different approach, mm-hmm. but do you find that abused children take longer than neglected children for trust?
No, I really don't. It's just as Phoebe said earlier, children are incredibly resilient and strong, and I think, especially with younger children, they can trust you very quickly as long as you're with them and and you're pleasant and you're happy and you're not, we don't dwell on the abuse, as Phoebe also said. We talk about just things that our children are interested in, and we like to do projects with children that they have fun doing. Sometimes it takes longer to develop a relationship with an older child or a teenager, but it might even take 2 months to develop a relationship with an older child, but keep on going back, keep on visiting them, and then they realize, hey, this person is responsible, and she's doing what she said she was going to do, and she's here for me. They know that CASA is simply there for them, and that's the main reason that we do it.
I someone mentioned to me, and probably Phoebe through one of the emails that we exchanged, by the way, Phoebe Frosch, Patty Thomas Cato here from the local CASA organization. There is something called a teen initiative that has been discussed. Has it been started?
Yeah, it started in our office. And this is something that grew out of the trends and the experiences in children's lives that we were seeing in the office. We are in a great position to see patterns, to see what is a real problem in children's lives. Last year we advocated for 188 children, so we have a lot of stories in our office.
How many volunteers do you have?
We have 90 volunteers in a given year, active volunteers, maybe not at a given moment, but in the course of a year. We train new volunteers every single year, twice a year, so many stay on, and then each training class has about 20 volunteers in it that are then inducted. Just to put a plug in, our next training for the fall starts on September 23rd. It is, as Patty said, a 30-hour training with 2 hours of court observation of actual cases, and it meets in the evening in the fall. In the springtime, it meets during the day, but in the fall, we get a lot of people who work full-time or are home with their children and come out. It meets from 6 to 9 in the evening, starting on September 23rd, and there's a process. You don't just show up, but there's an application process and an interview that goes on before that. But we're actively looking for people to join us there.
But what is the teen? I mean, why do you need a special focus on the teen initiative?
Right. What we have seen over the years is that teens do not, for instance, make up the greatest number of our cases, but they make up our hardest cases. And we wanted to train a staff member to focus on those volunteers specifically who are working with teens, to give them more attention, give the volunteers more attention, to work with them about, you know, difficult conversations. It's not unusual to have a teenager who doesn't say a lot back to you, unlike a five-year-old. I happen to live with two of those at home. And also, what are the resources? Teenagers who have been abused and neglected, this abuse and neglect could have happened when they were five or six. So it's the same cute little 7 or 8-year-old, but there's something about when you become a teenager that the behavior really kicks in that can be a response to abuse and neglect from many years ago, and it's much harder to deal with. They can harm themselves and others in a variety of ways that are not available to a small child. Certainly, you know, all of the social problems that we all are too familiar with, behavioral problems, academic failure, truancy, you know, not showing up at school, running away from home, tremendous anger, low self-esteem, mistrusting adults, which, as Patty's saying, most young children do not. Pregnancy is an issue, of course, drug use, criminal behavior. As you were saying, Rick, these aren't children who come to us for any delinquency problem, but by the time they're 17 and 18, this can become a factor because they are disturbed young people because of often the experiences they've been through and unstable homes and just a variety of dysfunctional families. So we want to serve them better. There's also just the mere fact of being older that foster care can end at 18. And then they are free to make a decision to leave. And that's called aging out of the system. And there are children, because of their needs and their behavior, who never can fit and stay with a foster family. So they are still in residential facilities at 18 years old. They could be living in a group home. They could be living in a psychiatric facility or what is called a residential facility. It's kind of like a dorm in a college, but they're 15, 16, 17. When these children are free to leave, they don't have, at times, they don't have a connection to anybody else in this world. And that's just a terrifying situation. And so serving them better involves, in part, trying to help them form connections way before then, so that when you become 18, you are bonded to another adult, even if it's not your biological family, that you have a connection, that you have a sense of stability, something that is going to help you. The statistics are extremely discouraging about what happens to children who age out of foster care. 1 in 4 will be incarcerated in 2 years. 1 in 5 will become homeless. Only half of them graduate from high school. So it's a very serious problem, and we know we're not going to solve these problems, but in our little area, that's the beauty of this program. We can focus very hard on local children and try to make a difference.
All right, 11:41 here on the Wake Up Call to talk about the interests of abused and neglected children and an organization here in Charlottesville that represents that. 979-0919 877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, is it possible to make recycling all materials as easy as tossing them into a single trash can bin? Entrepreneur Peter Van Linn says yes. Charlottesville and Albemarle aren't so sure. And speaking of waste, The Hook offers some tips on cutting back the junk mail you currently receive. And where has The Eater gone this week? A restaurant review that just makes you hungry to eat out. The Hook, rain or shine, every Thursday. And support for WNRN this hour has come from Alt Energy of Charlottesville. Alt Energy, providing professional design and installation of solar energy systems in Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Alt Energy solar systems can pay for themselves and reduce your carbon footprint. More at altenergy.com. And not that you would, but don't go anywhere, because Drew Thompson is here for Les Temps Perdue starting at noon. If French isn't your thing here at the station, that means the time's gone by. And on WNRN, that's 80s through mid-90s alternative music. Tune in for it at noon. That's Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right. Phoebe Frosch. Patty Thomas Cato. I couldn't say that because I had to cheat. Patty Thomas Cato from our local organization, CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, here in the studio. 979-0919. I see that line is blinking. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, if you're a little further out. We talked a little bit about how is CASA funded. Federal, state, local monies. What do you do to get, and you said that was 25%.
Yeah, it's an interesting setup where, you know, I mentioned that we are a mandatory referral by these courts, which Charlottesville and Albemarle have adopted that policy on their own. I mean, it's a voluntary policy to assign every case to us, and yet we raise our own money to be there for them. There are many communities we've not gotten together, haven't just taken the initiative of private citizens starting a CASA program where there just one does not exist. And it has been studied, and the statistic is that children with a CASA volunteer receive more services than a child without a CASA volunteer. So it's an important program, and it's too bad it isn't everywhere, but it's a great thing that it is so many places. And people in this community got together, as I mentioned, and started it. So a big part of my job is to keep it going funding-wise. We apply for grants from private foundations, and we are very fortunate in this community to have a very loyal donor base, which I, in large part, inherited as I came into this job. I don't take responsibility for it, but we're also always looking for new donors, looking to involve new people in what we do.
What do you do to get the money? I mean, do you have special events? And how has the current economy affected donations for you, whether it's governmental or whether it's, private?
Right. Well, so far, private donors are just as generous as ever, and we love each and every one of them, great and small.
And WNRN feels the same way about
yes.
Our listeners here.
We're all out there. Government grants have definitely been affected. And one of our goals in development at CASA was to be as independent as possible from government grants. That makes you the most stable you can be, because it is tremendously important that this organization never go away. And so we're always looking in our goals to become as stable ourselves as we want these families to be, and to always be able to be there for the children. And so our independence of government grants is actually something that helps us, and we have been fairly successful with that, because this year particularly, there's definitely a big hit coming, and we're in a fortunate position, but we work hard every single day to stay in that position.
I'm curious, Virginia, Northern Virginia, has gotten a lot of publicity, negative publicity about this. Virginia, and certainly many other states, have made laws, or certainly are attempting to make laws, in not assisting immigrants. And I'm curious as to whether or not this plays against the mission of CASA.
Wow. Now,
how does it affect people who may come to your door otherwise?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it certainly is part, well, our mission is to advocate for children whose cases are before the 16th Judicial District. Immigration issues would at times prevent those children perhaps from getting before the courts in the 16th Judicial District, and we would have no control or power over that.
But my understanding of one of the, or several of the laws that were at least attempted to pass, is that anything with a federal fund, a state fund, a local fund, could not be used by, and it could not be given to an immigrant. So have you ever seen immigrants, children who might otherwise be sent to you? Have you ever seen them not sent to you?
No. I mean, and let's be careful to say illegal immigrants, I think is what you're talking about.
Yes, and I'm faulty for that. Thank you for correcting me.
We're all immigrants.
That's correct. And I know some very special, so my apologies for that.
But I know what you meant, Rick. We, of course, don't see what we don't see. However, something we are seeing is more refugee families coming in. These are legal citizens, and that is a challenge to us, that is a challenge, I think, to all of Charlottesville. Just as we are very locally based and we serve a very local community, every change in Charlottesville is something we feel. The International Rescue Committee is of course active and doing good work in this community, and has brought in families from many war-torn and strife-filled communities in Africa and in all over the world. And those children are often struggling to integrate into the system, and so are their families. You know, just as there's a culture of poverty, there's a culture of foreign cultures, and they often don't jive with our definitions of abuse and neglect and how you raise a child. And we have had those children come through the court system and come into our program. They present a challenge because their families are have very different cultural values that, of course, extend to child rearing, because that is one of the most value laden activities that exists. And they don't speak English, and that's a challenge for us that we are seeking to meet.
That's Phoebe Frosch, one of the directors at the Piedmont CASA. Patty Thomas Cato, a volunteer. I'm curious, you mentioned the variety of ways that you research a case. Go through that again one more time, and let me know, have you ever, in the number of cases that you've had, experienced someone who wasn't quite so positive in letting you know this information?
That's a very good question. I guess in the very beginning of your case, you have to investigate anything that involves the child and the child's life. And I said that could be the teachers at the school, the principal, any doctors, any medical doctors or psychologists that the child has talked to. If the child is in a foster home, you meet the foster family, and you basically just, and this, of course, you talk to the social worker involved in the case and the attorneys. So it's just anyone involved in that child's life you need to meet and get to know, and also you need to get information from them. Occasionally in the past, yes, I have had a few people that I've dealt with that wouldn't really want to relinquish certain information to me, but that always worked out, and I always got what I needed to report to the judge, and always needed that information to put in my report. So that always worked out, but occasionally people would not be familiar with CASA, would not really understand the role of CASA, so sometimes it would take a little bit of time and convincing and even help from our support staff to get the documentation that we needed.
And one thing I would add, just from my experience speaking in the community about this program, I am often asked a question, is this work safe, which is something that had really never occurred to me. And it's great to know that that's in people's minds out there. And the answer is, of course, it is. We certainly teach about safety, but a very important part of what this program teaches is not to demonize these parents, not to demonize and blame people who have indeed at times, you know, really let their children down. The bottom line is the child. We're there for the child's best interest, the child's safety. If that isn't happening, the child can't stay in that environment. Your sympathy doesn't go that far. However, this is one of the great contributions of CASA programs all over the country, is you connect with people you really wouldn't know otherwise, and you begin to see that someone can both love their child and neglect that child. You understand how, you know, people who are mentally retarded, people who are drug addicted, people who are mentally ill, who suffer from terrible depression or bipolar syndrome, these people have children just like everyone else does. And how are we going to take care of those children and raise them? It doesn't mean that these are bad people, that they're violent people, or that they're angry at you. And Patty mentioned listening. Patty's a wonderful volunteer because she is such a good listener, and people love to tell their story. People almost always welcome us into their homes.
All right, let me get this call. Allison, are you still there?
I am.
Hey, Allison from Charlottesville. Comment, question?
I wanted to comment on what a great organization CASA is. I work with kids in foster care and just think that they really do a tremendous job. But I also just wanted to comment on the need, and there's a great need in our area for therapeutic foster homes. So I just want to put a plug in for anybody that would be considering taking in a foster child and putting it out there that there is just a tremendous need, especially for foster homes that would be willing to take in older kids, such as teenagers.
Is that what therapeutic is?
Therapeutic is a higher level of care than traditional foster care, so the parents get higher training and a greater level of support, and they actually get a tax-free monthly stipend.
All right. Allison, thanks for that.
Great. Thank you.
11:54 here on the Wake Up Call. Let me take my moment and thank 45fix.com. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. I want to ask this question, and I've been kind of putting it off. CASA is known for doing nothing but great things. But as I was reading the information, somewhere in there it said that numbers show services denied to 14 children. And I'm curious what would cause that to happen.
Yeah, well, what causes that to happen is that we don't have a volunteer to assign to that child. So our program is constantly trying to grow to meet the demand for our services. In the last fiscal year after that, we denied services, I believe, to 8 children. So we're doing better. But, you know, the phone rings, there's a removal hearing or there's a protective order hearing. They want us on that case. We have a waiting list in the office. At the end of every training class, we pretty much have a case for every single person we have just trained. So it's a nonstop process. That is the only reason that we denied those cases. There's a very rare occasion that we're assigned a case that we don't think is right for us. But
what would cause that?
Well,
because that was my initial thought was,
right.
Gosh, you know, they didn't qualify, or, you know, it was a dangerous situation.
No, those are never the criteria would never be danger. It is something that, for instance, the elements of abuse and neglect we didn't feel were there, or the family moved, that happens. I mean, it's all just technicalities. The real reason that we can't serve every child assigned to us is that we don't have a volunteer. And if the case stays on our wait list too long, then sometimes it's resolved itself through the court system, or it's been on the wait list too long. So that is the major reason that we need more and more volunteers. It's wonderfully rewarding work, and it's very manageable to do in addition to many other things going on in your life. The population of Charlottesville is changing and growing, so we want to see these new people coming in and contacting us.
All right, it is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg, 11:57 here on the Wake Up Call. Two things I want to do. I want to ask this question, and then I'd like you to go out. We've exchanged some information in terms of, I guess, situations, and I want you to go out, pick a positive one out of that. Does CASA, again, CASA being court-appointed special advocates representing the best interests of abused and neglected children, does CASA have a similar or a sister organization that provides help to others, adults, you know, abused wives kind of thing?
No, I wish we did. I mean, there are different organizations, of course. One of the issues we come upon a lot is that the parents in these cases are very much in need of as much or more attention than the children, and that is not our job. There's, of course, Adult Protective Services, and there are, you know, shelters for adults and a variety of things, but children are a special and protected category because they are minors, and also because they are the future population. These are the children who deserve our help because, as you've said, they've done nothing, and they are resilient, and they're trying their hardest. And also because they're going to be around a long time, and these are the disturbed adults if we don't help them. They need help, and they need to heal and to be rehabilitated themselves, and they respond so well to the attention they get.
All right, here's what we're going to do. Next week, we're going to talk about politics again. Pete Ronayne, two citizens interested in politics, will be in the studio. And we're going to go out with Phoebe Frosch, who is the director of Advancement at Piedmont CASA. We've also had Patty Thomas-Cato, a volunteer here. And one of you is going to read, and again, you're going to have about 60 seconds to read something. Let's go out on a positive note for a situation that CASA has been able to help with. Ladies?
Okay, thanks. Well, this is actually not on the piece of paper. This is a case that I have been supervising someone and working with. It's a family of three boys. They were removed. They were put in foster care an hour away from town. Their mother has never physically harmed them. She is, however, seriously addicted to cocaine and crack. She cannot raise these children. They were unsupervised. They were failing in school. They're doing very well in foster care. It's gone through the court system. The CASA has worked endlessly, tirelessly with this family. Cannot change, of course. None of us can change the mother's addiction. None of us can bring them back to her. But how are they going to live in foster care? He has brought their grandmother to see them. He has and advocated to the court that they need to see their mother. They're staying in foster care. The mother is cooperating because she feels she's been listened to. The daughter just wrote a letter that says, and I quote this with her permission, "You weren't the best mom in the world, but you were the best mom in our world. We didn't need a perfect mom. This is something that we can bring to the judge, that we can tell him these children need to see their mother. She's currently incarcerated. Her life is not going well, but she is still their mother. No one else has the time or the attention to do this. This is a case where we've worked so well with the social worker, so well with the attorneys, and the children have really benefited to feel supported. Their mother doesn't speak badly about their foster parents, and you see it in the children's behavior.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11.